This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
It's our 50th episode. Thank you for sticking around. If you haven't heard all of them, they're all on the internet, on the web, or wherever you find your podcasts. You can go check them out. But we're very proud. 50 episodes of the Business Report. And we are going to the skies this evening. We are proud partners with Future Media at the Namibia Aviation Forum that has been constituted and is running at the moment as we speak, Thursday and Friday. We spent all of today at that forum. You'll hear some of the interviews that our Intrepid News team have gotten up to. So a lot looking to look forward to. Shortly I'll chat to Busy Wirab, who's CEO of the Namibia Airports Company, and also pretty much the energy who's put together this entire initiative. We'll speak to Aaron Munsey from the Airlines Association of Southern Africa. Lyndon Burns does our Market Watch. We also stay with the aviation theme for our spotlight. Andre Compion, the Managing Director of Fly Namibia, joins us in the spotlight this evening. And then a whole bunch of really interesting people in the aviation industry. We speak to a couple of pilots and try and understand their challenges and viewpoints. We also speak to Geert Lamar, the Market Intelligence and Consulting Director for Airbus in France. We also speak to Monique Lant van Boerenkamp, who operates in the Netherlands, founder of Unchained People. She tells us a little bit more about people leadership with an aviation theme. So lots to look forward to in the next hour and a half or so. Let's get straight into it, though. It's time now for our business flash briefing.
Growing the economy together. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your Biz News, I'm Tona Takavila. Shares of JSE-listed grocery chain Spar slumped on Wednesday after it reported muted operating profit growth for its year-to-end September, hit by surging costs including for fuel and promotions, while its full-year dividend has more than halved. Referring specifically to Southern Africa, the group said that the region, almost two-thirds of group turnover, saw its operating profit dip 1.4% to 2.45 billion Namibia dollars. South Africa's biggest grocery retailer and owners of Checkers, OK Foods and others, Shoprite Holdings, on Monday reported first quarter sales growth of 18.6% as financially battered customers flocked to its stores for discounts. Then tech giant Amazon has begun laying off staff, according to LinkedIn posts by workers who say they have been impacted by job cuts. The company is hoping to cut 10,000 jobs, or around 3% of its office staff. It comes as thousands of jobs are being shed across the tech industry as firms see sales slow amid growing concerns about an economic downturn. And shares of Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company surged on Tuesday after Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway disclosed that it had purchased a $4.1 billion stake in one of the world's biggest chip makers. I'm Tonata Kavila. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
So let's start out with our lead story now. And our lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. So all of this week, we are focused on the Namibia Aviation and Connectivity Forum, an initiative largely driven by the National Airports Company, but in conjunction with a whole host of partners. And if we look at the quality of the partners, so the NIPBD, obviously involved in anything developing the economy at the moment, Ethiopian Airlines, RMB, Bank Vintook, Fly Namibia, Airlink, Nedbank, Lifon, Gondwana Collection, from a tourism perspective, even Namdia involved as a partner. So a number of very well-respected partners, along with, of course, Future Media, the official media partner for the Aviation Forum. And so our lead story this evening is talking to the energy, the inspiration behind the initiative, And of course, the Namibia Airports Company has, along with many other institutions, suffered greatly since the advent of COVID-19, the subsequent lockdowns, travel restrictions, and of course, a number of state airlines going bust here in Southern Africa, and of course, a number of international airlines not flying routes for quite a long time. In an effort to really, I suppose, create a spark in the aviation industry, both civil and commercial, the initiative was put together a forum of people interested in this space, aviation being seen to be the driving force of unlocking the Namibian economy, given the vast distances that have to be traveled, and of course, bringing access and connectivity to the Namibian population to the rest of the world. We attended the launch a couple of months ago. We were very impressed with the vision of what was trying to be put together and immediately became a partner. So here at the Business Report, we spent most of today, all of today, in fact, at the forum, and you'll hear Angie Schultz and David Bishop bringing you a number of those news pieces through the rest of the show. I was fortunate enough to chat to the energy behind it, the CEO of the Namibia Airports Company, Bisi Nuirab, who is also the chairman of the steering committee who put together the entire forum. I caught him just before the lunch break, so he was in a hurry to go and have a munch. He'd worked hard all morning. Here's me speaking to Bisi Nuirab. I'm speaking to Bisi Nuirab, the CEO of Namibian Airports Company, as well as the chairperson of the steering committee of the Aviation Forum. Bisi, it's so far we're at lunch, how do you feel the morning's gone?
Gary, the morning has gone extremely well. Thank you very much for having me here. We started this morning at about 8:30 with our program, and we had brilliant presentations from the working groups that were looking at some of the key areas that need a special focus in the area of aviation. We had identified 9 significant areas, some of which included issues around capacity building, issues around route development, investments in aviation industry, and of course issues around regulation. So all these 9 groups have done a brilliant job, and they have presented to us this morning. They have come up with brilliant recommendations that we should take forward beyond this forum. So I was extremely happy with the level and the capacity that was put in there. The presenters were from Namibia, from the rest of Africa, and also from some Europeans. So at this conference, we have the brain of aviation, not only from Namibia, but from Africa and from Europe. We have representatives from IATA, for example, from Airbus, from Airhow in Finland. So we have some CEOs from cargo companies like Swissport. So I'm very impressed with what we've done so far. We were also lucky to have 2 ministers addressing this meeting earlier today. We had a minister from Finland responsible for foreign relations and economic development, and we had our own teacher, Minister Mutura, responsible for transport, and he has really given us a good presentation, giving us historical context of where we are as a country. But I think the most important thing for me was the call to action that came during the first part of this meeting, that we need to look at issues around investment, around capacity building, around regulation, changing the laws to make it easier for us to really take this industry forward. So I'm very happy so far. The attendance is great. We have over 200 people who have joined us for this meeting.
Bisi, you mentioned that the working groups had made a number of recommendations. What recommendations in particular stand out for you as low-hanging fruit that will take us further to where we need to be?
Yeah, there are quite a number of them. A few that really caught my attention include issues around regulation, both in terms of regulation around aviation, to make sure that we open up the space without compromising on safety. That was very important. The other recommendation that came was issues around allowing people who visit this country and not to have too many restrictions, because aviation is about connection. It's about connecting people. So if you have too many rigid rules around people's movement in and out of this country, obviously you will not have the numbers that you wish to see. The other recommendation that came through was the need for us to really make sure that we invest properly in the infrastructure that will allow aviation to flourish, that will allow foreign airlines to come to our country. So it was really, really, really clear in terms of what needs to be done and for us to then go to action. What was also important is that there is a significant role to be played by both the private sector but also the public sector. And you can see that this forum is working extremely well because of that partnership. It's about connecting. It's about connecting people. And I think the theme for the or the name that we have given to this exercise really fits to what we want to achieve.
Of course, seminars like this often result in great dialogue, wonderful ideas, harmonious spirit. The real secret is execution of some of these ideas, recommendations. We'll have panel discussions this afternoon. There's a number of contentious issues that will be discussed, and we'll hear a wide diversity of views. How confident are you that coming out of the forum, that some of these things will be actionable?
I feel extremely comfortable that we will be able to show the nation that this is a different kind of a forum, it's a different kind of a conference. The commitment that I have seen, even with the planning of this event, with the execution of this meeting, the number of participants that came from within Namibia, from outside, and just the resources that were plowed into this event, really makes me feel that we're on the right path. What is important is that we are already very clear on the need for us to continue this forum in the form that it is. Strong partnership between the private sector and the public sector, but also continuously engaging with our international partners to make sure that we're on the right path. I think some of the issues that we're discussing here are very much in line with the national agenda, the national plans, national goals that we have. So it should not be easy, it should not be difficult for us to make sure that what we do here basically links into what happens elsewhere. We have the chairperson and the CEO of the Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board, for example, who has done many other things that are looking at spurring up investments into this country. She is strongly part of this. We are talking about the relationship between aviation and green hydrogen, the discovery of oil, and so on. So all these things are so interlinked. We are talking about aviation linkages with tourism. So these are low-hanging fruits that we should be working on. What will happen after this is we will produce a white paper that will make specific recommendations both in terms of regulatory reform, but also in terms of investment requirements, but also other actions that will be required to ensure that the spirit that is started here continues beyond this conference.
You mentioned just now that there'd been quite a lot of international representation here at the forum. Clearly, there's a big buzz about Namibia at the moment in the world, energy fines, a number of other reasons around that. Are you excited by the role that Namibia could play as a regional player going forward?
I tell you, I feel so excited. I only get goosebumps when I think about the future of this country, medium to long term. If these plans that we're putting into place work, once we start pumping that oil, once the green hydrogen projects start to work, some of our agricultural initiatives come to realization, Namibia will be the paradise that we've always been talking about. So I feel extremely confident, and it is for that reason, because of all those possibilities that are taking place in other spheres of our life, that we feel now that aviation must get its act together. Because it is aviation that connects people. It's aviation that moves cargo from one point to the other. Therefore, if all these things are happening in the spheres around us, why should aviation stand behind and be overtaken by these events? As these developments take place, aviation must also come to the party. We have got a lot of young people who are ready to stand up and to make things happen. So this forum has just come at the right time. I feel extremely excited, very positive, and ready to roll the ball.
Busy, you've got a lunch to get to and lots of friends to go and chat to. Congratulations so far, and all the best for the rest of today and tomorrow.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you guys, and thanks for being our media partner on this forum. We really appreciate it.
It's Busy Wirab, the CEO of Namibia Airports Company and the chairperson of the steering committee that has put together the Civil Aviation Forum taking place at Safari Hotel. That's this evening's lead story, and it was proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035. Namibia's business leader on Novo 1035.
Welcome back to the Spotlight here on Novo 1035. Every week we have the privilege of talking to Namibians from all walks of life who make a difference, whether it be in their communities or in a political sphere or adding to the economy. This evening, we're privileged to talk to Managing Director of Fly Namibia, Andre Campion, who joins us in the studio amongst a number of other interests he has. Andre, welcome to the spotlight.
Thank you very much, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
So let's start in the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your family and your origins and how you came to be in Namibia.
Gary, my dad was a GP in Otjiwarongo. That's where I grew up. He later moved to Windhoek. He actually started the first ICU in Kathatura State Hospital in the 70s. My mom was Irish. He studied medicine in Ireland, and they got married there. And I grew up going to school in Otjiwarongo. I ended up completing my high school career in Paarl, in Paarl Gym. And then I did my bachelor's in pharmacy at Potchefstroom University, and came back to start my first pharmacy in Windhoek in 1986, at the tender age of 25.
Okay, and I mean, that's quite a circuitous route from Otjiwarongo via Cape Town, via Potch, and then back here. You clearly didn't stay in the pharmacy route. Tell us a little bit about how that went.
It was an interesting time. I spent 7 years. I had three pharmacies in town, and I got bored stiff, standing between four walls every day. I just didn't enjoy the career. I started flying professionally whilst I still had the pharmacies. I had a part-time appointment with Namibia to do freight runs for them at night whilst I still had the pharmacies. And then I just saw that aviation was a lot more exciting to me than pharmacy, and I made a career change.
We ask a lot of people in this particular feature who've, you know, gone and done amazing things, the role that education's played in their life. And it is kind of halfway balanced between people who've kind of picked a route and developed a deep competency in a particular route, and people who've kind of gone to the world and tried different things. You're obviously in the latter. But let me ask the question, what role has education played in the development of your career?
I think it's critical, and I place a huge premium on good education. All four of my kids have gone through the same school that I have. Although I'm not using pharmacy in my day-to-day life anymore, I think going through tertiary education is formative, and it helps you to get just a different perspective on life. To me, it's very important. Whether you actually continue with the career that you've chosen or not, that's neither here nor there. Your development as a human being, the way in which you look at life, that really gets influenced by tertiary studies.
Now, I find pharmacy fascinating because it's a medical profession, but it is also a retail profession. Right? You're running a shop, and you're an entrepreneur, as opposed to potentially a GP who's a professional, and it's a slightly different mindset. You've clearly had an entrepreneurial streak from young. So perhaps just tell us a little bit about it, about being an entrepreneur. What about that is exciting for you?
Well, the freedom that it gives you, the endless possibilities. The sky is not the limit. You know, you can achieve anything you want if you're an entrepreneur. I tried to expand my business interests in pharmacy. But I still found it very restrictive because, you know, you have to be physically present in the pharmacy all the time that the doors are open. And I ventured into farming and aviation simply because there is no limit. You can grow as far as you wish. To me, it's the most stimulating aspect of my day-to-day life is that I can imagine anything and go do it. And that's really what entrepreneurship is all about. To be able to do whatever you wish to.
So perhaps let's just touch on that for a second. This is a big theme. That there's this sort of pervading belief that entrepreneurship will build the economy. Entrepreneurship is what's required, not more state investment or corporate environments. What is your view on that?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think government's role should simply be to create a conducive environment. Put legislation in place which will allow entrepreneurship to flourish. We need entrepreneurship from the lowest of levels. And Namibians are entrepreneurs in spirit. You know, if you see how many of the street merchants make a living under very difficult conditions because they're entrepreneurs at heart. I think that's where the future of our country lies. Less government involvement, but a conducive environment in which entrepreneurs can flourish.
All right, now you're clearly a man who follows his passions, and aviation, as you said, is one of those. And I have yet to meet someone who started flying who doesn't think it's the best thing in the world. Tell us a little bit more about how you got into aviation to start with.
I think it's in our genes. My dad was a GP, but he flew. My mum was an air hostess. My two brothers are both prominent pilots in the country. I always had the ambition to fly. I started flying when I was 16. Got a holiday job. My father met my income rand per rand at that stage.
Were you doing the crop spraying?
that was when I started with Gus. I serviced air conditioners in the old Swabo building.
Okay.
Whilst I was in grade 9. And I paid 30 rands at the time per flying hour for the aircraft and the instructor. But I started when I was 16, and I did my commercial license, like I said, when I was in the pharmacy already. The very first thing that I bought myself when I opened my first pharmacy was an aircraft. And I've been an aircraft owner proudly ever since. It's just something that I enjoy immensely, and I find it a fascinating field of business to be in.
What's the best thing you've ever flown?
Yo, I love Beechcraft products. My first aircraft was a Beech Bonanza. I had a couple of Beech Barons thereafter. I flew a King Air 200. They are just fantastic aircraft. We've now got Beechcraft 1900s on the fleet. I just love anything Beechcraft.
Okay. So we'll talk a little bit in the second clip about when we get into the forum. But civil aviation and obviously commercial aviation are two entirely different universes, and the reasons why people do these things are different. It would seem as if civil aviation hasn't really taken off perhaps in the way that it could have in Namibia, given the distances and given the sort of the great weather we have and so forth. Why is that, do you think? Is it just there isn't enough money for planes, or are there other reasons?
Well, I can tell you, when I was in practice, when I started in pharmacy in the middle 80s, many of the GPs in town had their own aircraft. Many farmers had their own aircraft. General aviation was thriving. People were flying all over the place. It became very, very expensive, partly due to the exchange rate, partly due to fuel costs. But then, unfortunately, civil aviation is being over-regulated. It's being regulated into the ground. I don't know whether you followed the airport saga, the airfield saga, but the legislation that's pending now will make it virtually impossible for all the private airfields in the country to continue to be in use. That to me is very sad. There's been a new development in aircraft, what's called non-type certified aircraft. The most successful example thereof was actually designed and is being built in South Africa, which is the Sling. It's got a Rotax engine. Fantastic aircraft. I own one.
Pretty things.
Really
well.
Economical. Really fantastic. And I see a revival in general aviation because of that. But the type certified stuff that we used to fly is just impossibly expensive nowadays to fly.
Of course, the exchange rates worked against us as well in many regards. It's still a dollar-based asset. And so to own one here, when you suddenly think, sure, that's worth a lot of money.
That's part of it. On the other hand, you know, with the liability claims that originated in the United States, that really led to some of the manufacturers stop producing the aircraft because of the liability exposure that they've had. That has made safety requirements for the maintenance of these aircraft just so impossibly expensive. Checks that they have to undergo because there was an isolated incident somewhere in the world where something cracked or broke. And that unfortunately has made the stuff that we grew up with, the aircraft that we grew up with, virtually impossible to fly today anymore.
Right, Andre, we're going to get into the business side of things in a second, but as always, we get a chance to peer into your soul and ask you to pick a song for us. What song have you picked for the audience?
Well, my favorite song, Bryan Adams, 18 Till I Die, my motto.
I want to be young. the rest of my life. Never say no, try anything twice. Till the angels come and ask me to fly. Gonna be 18 till I die. 18 till I die.
Here on Nova 103.5. It's the Spotlight. You're listening to the Business Report. I'm Gary Struble, and with me is Managing Director of Fly Namibia, Andre Compion, who's sharing us his personal journey through all sorts of different worlds, aviation being chief amongst them at the moment, and obviously the last year or so has been an exciting one for you guys. So let's talk about Fly Namibia. Over the last 12 months, we've seen, I think, what would be fair to say, a fairly dramatic revival. And in many quarters unexpected, but a big revival in kind of a return to normalcy with flights. We've seen a rebrand, which is very exciting. We've seen a buy-in from an international airline into Fly Namibia. It kind of really feels like this has been an enormous year for the company. Tell us a little bit more.
It has been. As you know, Fly Namibia started off as an initiative from West Air. It was Fly West Air. The potential was just so obvious to develop this into a strong domestic and regional player that I got involved. Airlink became a 40% shareholder, and we are now really looking at substantial expansions. We've already started flying to Walvis Bay, which is new. We're going to fly to Joburg twice a day as from the 1st of March. First quarter next year, we'll also be flying to Maun, to Vic Falls, and to Luanda. We've just received two more Embraer aircraft that were delivered to us. So it's a phase of very strong growth for the airline. I think we're uniquely positioned. I do believe there's a lot of confidence in what we're doing. As we've seen with Airlink's shareholding that they've taken up in the company. So yes, very exciting, Gary.
So commercial aviation has been dominated by state-owned airlines in Southern Africa through SAA and in Namibia. Those both have obviously had a fairly checkered last couple of years with Air Namibia basically having disappeared. We consistently hear, though, talks of revivals from the state-owned airlines. Now, as a consumer, we want the lowest possible price to fly. Well, that's the bottom line. And we want to do it on a trusted plane that will stay in the air and get on the ground at the right place. So the politics of these things are often not particularly what sits in the consumer's head. But often what state-owned enterprises do is, even though they might be fairly badly run businesses, typically they tend to be a little bit cheaper because of these things. Just perhaps without crossing any lines that you're not comfortable in, tell us a little bit about the kind of dynamic interplay between competing with the state, so to speak.
Well, let me say this. If you want to fly cheaply, you can do it two ways. You can fly cheaply on a state-owned airline, which will go bust and which will eat government's money all along. And, you know, and you'll subsidize that with the taxes that you pay. Or you'll pay a sustainable rate for your ticket and the airline will stay in the air. Now, unfortunately, it's been the case that government-owned airlines have made massive losses. They've flown at unsustainable ticket prices. And although the consumer might have thought that it was in their favor, countries are now faced with billions in liquidation costs, not only here, but also in South Africa. So the choice is the consumer's. You know, either you pay a realistic ticket price that will keep the aircraft flying, or you'll pay less for your ticket, but your tax money will go into a bottomless pit. That's the reality. We are a privately owned business. We have to make money, which is very difficult at the moment. But we will not fly for less than what it actually costs us to transport a passenger. And that's just the long and the short of it.
So let me ask another question that is something that sort of looms for civil or for commercial aviation at long term. And this is the whole area of climate change and, you know, the sort of perceived heavy burden that comes from air flights, that air flights are causing the problems. It's certainly well publicized. If you want to nail a rich guy, talk to him about his private jet and do a bit of shaming there. How do you see that aspect of your kind of long-term business planning? How do you sort of balance the checkbook there, so to speak?
Well, firstly, the newer generation aircraft are becoming more and more and more economical. For as long as we have combustion engines, there will be pollution, period. We can't get away from it. There's significant advances being made on smaller types of aircraft with electrical engines. That's coming. Alternative energy sources for aircraft engines will come in time. The critical thing is, however, that you cannot develop the economy, especially in our country, without air transport. So, you know, we can reduce the pollution by not flying, but the economy will go belly up. That's the long and the short of it. And we have to be responsible in how we run our business and try and limit pollution as far as we can. But as long as you burn fossil fuels as a source of energy, there will be pollution. That's unfortunately where we are.
So that segues nicely into what's happening this week. Civil Aviation Forum, or an aviation forum for Namibian Aviation Forum taking place this week. They've brought together a number of players across all the various aspects. There's some interesting panel discussions that I'm going to look forward to hearing the divergent views on things, because nothing's ever black or white. And Fly Namibia is obviously a big part of that. We have to see this as a positive step. Government trying hard to engage. This is obviously the airports company that have put this together. It's in their interest to have planes landing and taking off. That's their core business. But we have to see this as a positive development in trying to make the world better for this particular sector.
I think it's hugely positive, and I honestly hope that whatever will transpire from the deliberations during this forum will be implemented. There are so many examples in the world of where airport development actually led to regional development. development and the stimulus of economy, as we've seen in Cape Town with the Westgrow involvement there. And we really hope that we can duplicate that here. We need more wide-body traffic into Ziyakutaku. We need more tourists into the country. We need more connectivity. We need more direct access from countries other than just Germany, as we have at the moment. And I honestly believe that a lot of that will flow from what's going to be discussed this week.
So we've spent a bit of time on flying, but you're a man of many interests. You're also invested in accommodation in hotels, and you've got a restaurant that is a popular restaurant here in town, Stellenbosch. Tell us about those investments and those businesses, because every business brings its own problems. They bring very different problems to the one you'll be dealing with in aviation. Tell us a little bit about why you're in that space.
I enjoy hospitality. I enjoy tourism. I've been involved in my whole business life through aviation, and whilst I was farming up north, I had a lodge on the farm. I had an opportunity. I have two very good friends who are my partners in these businesses. They had the restaurants. I decided to invest in the hotel side of it, and then the opportunity arose where we could buy land next to the Stellenbosch restaurants. We decided to build a hotel there, and it's going exceptionally well. I'm enjoying it. I'm not spending all my time there anymore. I'm spending most of my time with Fly Namibia now. But I enjoy the investment. I enjoy the business. I enjoy the interaction. It's a fun business to be in.
Get to meet a lot of people.
A lot of people and very interesting people.
So let's talk about just very briefly. You're exposed to a number of businesses that would have been heavily impacted through COVID, the pandemic, the lockdowns, the regulations and so forth. As a business owner, perhaps just share a lesson that you've learned going through this. And it was a very unique time in the Namibian economy specifically.
It was terrible. My hairstyle is not my chosen one. It's a result of COVID. It taught us a couple of things. The first one is that we had to cut our expenses and get our business as optimal as possible. I'm happy to say that in the restaurant and the hotel side, we didn't retrench a single person. We could keep all our staff on board at immense cost, but we pulled through. We've now got a very lean and a mean and an effective business. That was most probably the biggest lesson. The second one was that we just couldn't give up. You know, we finished the new hotel in September 2019, and by March 2020, the doors were shut. We could have thrown our hands into the air and just given over, but we decided to fight this thing through. And it showed the tenacity of the people who believe in us, and we made it, thankfully. But it really, I think the lesson that we've all have learned is don't take anything for granted and be ready for the worst that you can imagine, because that's what COVID brought us.
Let's close out by looking forward. Both sectors you're involved in, aviation as well as the hospitality space, have had a good revival. It looks good at the moment. The prospects look good. Energy fines. There's a lot of excitement around Namibia globally at the moment. There seems to be a real buzz around opportunities that are going on. NIPBD doing great work and laying foundations for these conversations as well. And government in general doing good work by not getting in the way of many of these conversations. What do you see happening over the next 3 to 5 years in Namibia, and what excites you the most?
We work very closely with the oil and gas industry, both on the hospitality side, we many of them make use of our facilities, and also on the aviation side, we do a lot of transport for them. And I'm hugely excited with what's happening now. I think there's a very prosperous time ahead for us. I just think it's very important now not to get carried away as a business person, to still consolidate after each step that you've taken, and not spend the money that may be coming in 10 years' time, but still have a conservative approach to it. Then I think we're in for the best time of our lives.
Next aeroplane?
Soon.
Watch this space. André Confian, Managing Director of Fly Namibia, owner of businesses, restaurants, hotels, and all-around raconteur here in Windhoek. Thank you so much for joining us here in the Spotlight. It's been wonderful to speak to you.
Thank you, Gary. My pleasure.
That's this evening's Spotlight here on The Business Report.
The Business Report.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The Biz News Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors. MNZ Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Contact MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive or visit the MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything.
We're live at the Namibia Aviation and Connectivity Forum, and with me I have Mr. Aaron Monetti from the Airlines Association of Southern Africa. Good day, Mr. Monetti.
Good day. Thank you very much for having me.
Could you give us a brief outline, the Airlines Association of Southern Africa? What is it that you do? Are you a regulatory body?
We actually represent the interests of all the airlines in the Southern Africa region. So all the SADC member states, any airline that operates in those countries or is based in those countries, they are free to join us. We are a voluntary organization, airlines joined by their own volition. But what we do is we actually stand and regulate and assist them in terms of understanding the regulations. So we are their advocates. We actually have a lot of advocacy with the regulating authorities in all the 16 different countries.
Okay. And so there's been quite a lot of talk about how a lot of the regulatory environment needs to be updated and be changed. You'd be involved in things like that.
That's correct. So all the talk, especially the discussion that we've just had now from the Minister of Works and Transport, talking about liberalization, talking about reforming the policy framework, and also probably even rejuvenating some of the legislation. Mm. Those are the things that we get involved with on behalf of the airlines.
It must be quite complicated because I assume each country would have its own regulatory environment, and a lot of that needs to be updated, but then you also want to try and harmonize between, if you're doing the Southern African region, how do you firstly advocate for countries to change their own regulatory environment and then in such a way that the entire region is harmonized?
So the beauty of it all is that aviation is very standard. It's standardized. So we all subscribe, as states, every country subscribes to the International Civil Aviation Organization, which then puts together standard recommended practices. Let's say when you're operating an airline, this is what is supposed to happen. When you're regulating an airspace, this is what is supposed to happen. So there are specific regulated standards and practices that every country subscribes to. Where we get into challenges and exciting conversations is what I call the TLC. Now, most people would know TLC as tender, love, and care. Actually, it's not that. It's the taxes, the levies, and the charges that people pay. That's where we've got a huge role in telling and actually engaging with almost every country to say, do not overtax, do not over levy, do not overcharge. If you do that, you're going to kill the aviation industry. Mm. And as you heard, the aviation industry has got a catalytic effect in growing economies and then developing jobs.
How does one sort of balance that? Because I know that there was talk at one stage that airport taxes made up far too much of the price of the ticket. But obviously the airports themselves need to generate an income because they're not receiving money, you know, from elsewhere. So how does one balance that out?
So it's a very interesting question that you have, because indeed airports have to have a mode of generating revenue for them to be self-sustaining. But remember, airports are just like the road network. Mm-hmm. The government has a responsibility to provide that facility. The maintenance of those facilities is then when the users come into play. Mm. So the users must also contribute and play their role in terms of putting in some resources to make sure the airports are maintained and so forth. So our role is actually not to say do not charge, mm-hmm. but to say to them charge according to the regulated practices, which means we actually engage the airport owners themselves and the airport users. We all come together and we say, so if you want to increase your tariffs, can you explain to us why you're increasing the tariffs by this amount? either from a CAPEX point of view or from an OPEX point of view or both. And then we have to find a happy medium where we say we don't agree with this increase, but if you come to this level, we're all in agreement, and then everybody's happy.
Okay. To bring things back to today's and, well, today and tomorrow's forum, I suppose yesterday as well because the working groups were there, is your role here as an observer or are you more involved?
So I was actually selected as the chairperson of the sustainability work group. So I was assisting all the team members in that sustainability work group to come up with the, I don't want to call it a white paper, but with a position document that said this is what we believe should be the focus for Namibia from a sustainability point of view. And we were able then to say sustainability can be viewed in two forms. The first one is obviously when airlines talk about sustainability, everybody thinks it's about profit and loss. Is the airline sustainable as an operation? Which is fine. We can't ignore that. But for this intent and purpose here, we say let us just put that, ring fence that as something that we'll address later. But right now, we're talking about environmental sustainability. How do the airlines continue to operate in a responsible, environmentally sustainable manner? Remembering that aviation and tourism are intractable. You can't separate the two. So when we bring tourists, what is the footprint for carbon emissions, for example? But not only that, once the tourist hits the ground, where are they going? They are going to the Namibia desert, they are going wherever. They are also creating a footprint there. And in terms, I mean, I made an example this morning to say, we are at a conference where we're talking about sustainability, and I'm surprised to see plastic water bottles. Because all that is part of sustainability. So that's what we did as the sustainability work group. That's why I'm here.
As with the sort of other best practices, are there existing global best practices when it comes to sustainability, or is it something that the working group is having to do from scratch?
No. There's quite a lot of work that has been done. I spoke earlier on about the International Civil Aviation Organization. It's come up already with a product called CORSIA, CORSIA, which is carbon offset for international aviation, which actually says to us what should we be doing in terms of encouraging manufacturers to come up with sustainable aviation fuel, disuse or continued use of single plastic, and also the carbon offsets that we are also saying, let us now start using biofuels, for example. So those are the things that are already in place. However, we are also saying for countries like Namibia, the aviation policy should be relooked at and see where elements of sustainability have been left out, they must be put back, and then they must actually become top priority. So we are encouraging regulators to say sustainability must come at the top, not at the bottom. It used to be a nice to have, it's no longer a nice to have. Everybody now is talking about ESG, environmental sustainability and governance. It must be at the top.
So rather than just copying the best practices, we want to be better.
We want to be better than, and also make sure that they are practical to our own environment.
The BizNews Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
So continuing our theme of aviation and coverage of the Aviation and Connectivity Forum. Angie Skultz now in our Market Watch speaks to Lyndon Burns, who's an aviation analyst and the managing director of Plane Talking.
Where are we in the recovery of the aviation sector after the pandemic, which essentially led to the grounding of all flights? This pertains to the transport of passengers as well as goods.
So if we look across the world as an industry, and then I'll zoom in more on Southern Africa, but if we look worldwide, there's been a very strong surge in demand over the last year or so, really since the end of Omicron. And with the lifting of the travel restrictions, we've seen a huge bounce back in the industry to the extent, in fact, where the wheels were starting to fall off because some of the major airports around the world were not equipped, didn't have the necessary resources in place to deal with and to manage the surge in demand. You know, took on a lot of debt during the pandemic in order to stay afloat. And so they're still struggling to pay off that debt. And that meant that they haven't had the money, the cash in hand, to start reinvesting in people and reinvesting in new equipment, things like security equipment and X-ray machines and items like that. Because the other thing that has happened while we've had the pandemic is that there have been new rules that have been passed in many parts of the world in terms of the level of security and the capability of security equipment. And so it's placing demands on airports to reinvest and to ramp up and improve and enhance their security processes and the type of equipment that they use. So that's a lot of pressure in terms of capital that, frankly, you know, airports and airlines just were not in a position to spend. But the situation is improving on a daily basis. With the exception of China, pretty much the rest of the world is now coming back on stream in terms of air travel. And if we look at Southern Africa, we are probably about 30% below 2019 traffic levels if we want to measure the recovery in terms of demand for seats that have been sold and the number of passengers who've been flown. We're slower in our recovery than North Africa and West Africa, both of which have surpassed 2019 levels. And we're also a bit slower than Eastern Africa, which is only about 5% behind 2019. And a large part of that, the reason why our recovery has been slower, is because we've had the exit of carriers like Air Namibia in your part of the world, and we've seen the downscaling of an airline like South African Airways, which was the biggest dominant carrier in our region, went from having 52 aircraft to having just 7 or 8 airplanes, from operating hundreds of flights a day to having just 25 a day. It's, you know, essentially scaled down by 90%. Then we also had with that the exits of South African Express, which had been in trouble for years before the pandemic, but that was sort of the final nail in the coffin. And then the big shock, of course, was the demise of Comair, taking with it the British Airways by Comair South African operation, which also operated into Namibia and other countries in the region, and Kalula.com, which was the pioneering low-cost airline. So we've seen a lot of capacity taken out of the market. At the same time, we're seeing carriers like Airlink, which operates into Namibia, increasing a lot of capacity, building up their fleet. They're now operating 63 aircraft and adding more all the time. FlySafair also acquiring additional aircraft and increasing the number of frequencies that they fly as well, and Semair doing the same. There's still a huge gap in terms of foreign travel and the amount of capacity that we can feed into the market, and that's purely a function of the exits of SAA and Air Namibia to a large extent.
What current challenges are preventing the aviation industry from making the numbers they would like to see? Has the carbon taxes and footprint reduction plans have any stake in this at the moment, or can we only expect this to have an effect in the future as we approach 2050?
So I think there are a couple of things we've got to look at. The first thing we're going to look at when we look at the recovery, what are the hindrances to the recovery? The first is obviously market access. And we're talking here not so much about domestic markets, but about cross-border flights, yeah, international flights, anything that requires flights from one country to another, whether it's across an ocean or whether it's just across the border to your neighboring country. And that's because that type of aviation in Africa is regulated by a series of bilateral air service agreements, which are negotiated on a country-to-country basis, negotiated by the respective governments. And those agreements basically set a cap on the number of flights that can be operated between any two points. They limit the number of airlines that are designated by each country and given permission to operate those services. And they also put a cap on the number of flights that they can operate, and therefore the number of people who can be accommodated. So that artificially creates a sort of choke point or a bottleneck. And we've got a situation here at the moment where a lot of the big foreign carriers from Europe or the Americas, they're flying up to the maximum that they are permitted in terms of those bilaterals. But we're still leaving a lot of business on the table, a lot of people who can't get seats on flights because the foreign airlines can't add more than they already are. under those bilaterals, and the reciprocal countries don't have the ability, because they don't have an SAA or an Air Namibia anymore, that are capable of operating long-haul or international flights to fulfill the reciprocal side of those bilateral agreements. So that's the one impediment. And the way to get around that is to reform your regulations that restrict market access and to perhaps relax some of those restrictions, because at the end of the day, economies don't care who brings the tourists and the business travelers. What's important is that they get to your country, bring their hard-earned currency with them, and spend it in the economy, which helps to create jobs, sustain livelihoods, sustain industries, whether we're talking about agriculture, tourism, mining, whatever it happens to be. And the same in terms of promoting exports from a country like Namibia. Air connectivity is absolutely vital to any aspirant, modern, sophisticated economy. And it should be absolutely agnostic from the perspective of where is the airline that is carrying these people, in which country is that airline based. That shouldn't be an issue. The bigger issue is, how do we grow our economy? How do we use air connectivity? How do we leverage it to grow our economy, to create jobs, to sustain livelihoods, and create economic opportunities for people?
With Airlink and Fly Namibia joining forces earlier this year, what could this mean for the aviation industry in the Namibian context, especially as far as passenger travel is concerned?
So I think one needs to just look at exactly what that was. It was an investment by Airlink in Fly Namibia and its parent company. What it means, though, is that Fly Namibia will have its flights and all of its inventory made available through the global reservation system that Airlink has. And the global reservation systems are very powerful tools. They're algorithm-based, they use a lot of big data, they drive what we call dynamic pricing in various markets, and they give you visibility. It's like having a billboard in every travel agency around the world and online on the online travel agencies. And for an operator like Fly Namibia, if it was to try and do it on its own, it would be a very, very expensive exercise. But this way, it allows them to do it in conjunction with Airlink, and it allows them to synchronize their respective connecting flights so that you can have that feed, so that if a passenger is coming from Ondangwa to Windhoek, they can connect conveniently onto an onward flight with Airlink to Johannesburg or Cape Town, for example. And because Airlink has a whole lot of partnerships now with some of the biggest global airlines, so let's say you had a passenger arriving from New York in Cape Town, coming in on United, which is a partner of Airlink's. Well, that passenger, that customer, can now actually book all the way through. If they wanted to go up to Ondangwa or to Rundu or Katima or anywhere else that Fly Namibia operates to, they could do that all on one ticket, which makes life a lot easier. It also means that Fly Namibia will be able to build its network out of Windhoek in the SADC region beyond Namibia, and do so with the support of Airlink, and again, to make sure that there's good, proper feed. It's all about synchronization. It's about finding ways to offer good value for money and convenient feed. But it's not about a merger or a takeover at all. It makes good business sense, and it would have been silly not to do it, I think.
Do you think the future of air travel is aimed mainly at passenger travel or at cargo flights, and why?
I think when we look at the future, first of all, let's look at where we are today. You know, yes, the passenger side of the industry does tend to dominate. It's certainly, you know, a lot more visible. And also, a lot of the cargo that is carried in the belly cargo holds of the passenger jets. Now, during the pandemic, we saw that norm flipped on its head because people weren't able to fly, and a lot of airlines were trying to find alternative use for their aircraft. So they were converting some of those airplanes or removing seats so they could just carry cargo on the passenger deck. But that was extraordinary circumstance. That was never going to become a permanent fixture. So I think we return to that balance. As we see global trade picking up again as we see the restoration and the repair of global supply chains again, especially with the advent of things like e-commerce and also just-in-time manufacturing, and especially high-value, low-weight and low-volume items like smartphones and IT tech, then I think we're going to see greater reliance on air cargo. But all of this really has to be looked at in the context of the new demands and expectations, both from passengers and shippers and manufacturers and their customers, for a more holistically sustainable approach from an environmental point of view. So how we operate aircraft and carry those goods is going to be just as an important factor as how we actually manufacture them, how we derive the energy to power the factories that make those goods that airlines are going to carry is going to be just as important as how do we power the new aircraft, and do we use green hydrogen, do we use biofuels, what kind of sustainable aviation fuels become available. And we're looking at a whole of civil aviation as committed to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. That means not increasing carbon emissions beyond a baseline that was set several years ago by 2050, and from that time to reduce it. So we're not going to see a sudden flip in 2050 where all of a sudden aircraft that are flying today or being bought today are not going to be allowed to fly. There'll be a gradual phase out, but we need to make that move. And that's going to require the designers of aircraft and engines to come up with novel solutions so that we can still continue to carry the volumes of passengers and the volumes of cargo so that we can continue driving the economies but do so in an environmentally responsible way.
That's our Market Watch this evening, and that's Angie Skaltz speaking to Lyndon Burns, an aviation analyst and the managing director of Plane Talking.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. This is The Business Report with Gary Struble on Nova 1035.
So the disruption of the global aviation industry affected passengers naturally, and it also affected airlines and businesses and governments. But of course, it affected pilots. Angie Skaltz now speaks to two Namibian pilots attending the forum about what they're expecting to get out of bringing everyone together at this event.
I'm joined by a few pilots that is attending the forum. What would you like to see at the end of this forum?
I think the most important thing we would like to see is new airlines being created, new alliances, growth in the aviation industry, especially for us young pilots. I mean, Air Namibia was such a big inspiration to us. We've always wanted to fly for Air Namibia, fly for our country's national airline. So once Air Namibia folded, it was a bit of a setback for us, but we're still pushing through. So we are hopeful and we are grateful that this is taking place, and then we hope for growth and jobs, and because we would love to stay in Namibia, we'd love to fly in Namibia and be part of the economy, the thing I would love to see.
What would you like to see at the end of the forum?
Well, I would like to say that at least at the end of the day, we'll have opportunities of which new pilot, and as I'm a female pilot, I would like to also end up being in a certain company, of which I also have to attract, encourage other females to join the aviation industry.
Thank you so much.
Angie Skaltz speaking to two Namibian pilots about their experiences and expectations. David Bishop now catches up with Geert Lemaire, the Market Intelligence and Consulting Director for Airbus.
We're at the Namibia Aviation and Connectivity Forum today, and I'm speaking to Mr. Geert Lemaire, the Market Intelligence and Consulting Director at Airbus. Hello, Mr. Lemaire.
Good morning.
It seems like a question with an easy enough answer, but why is it important for Airbus to be represented at this forum?
Okay, well, thank you very much for that question. Indeed, it's quite an obvious question, but nevertheless, important to be answered. Look, first of all, as a global aircraft manufacturer, a global player in the aviation industry, of course, Airbus has every interest in knowing what is happening in the market. So we want to understand the market. We want to understand what is happening in the air transport industry, because, of course, we are very much in it, and this is influencing what we need to do and to gear up for ourselves too. That's the first point. The second point is that, of course, we are interested in connecting with all the aviation stakeholders, and particularly here in Africa, because we have indeed our fleet in Africa, in-service fleet, aircraft on order. We want to be connected with these stakeholders in the aviation industry, because this is a global industry, and if we want to move on and if we want to advance, our view is that indeed everybody needs to be able to advance together, and therefore indeed we decided to come over and be here today.
Okay, you're doing a presentation today. It focused on the state of the regional industry and the outlook. Without having to restate everything that you said, could you give our listeners a summary?
Yes, well, I'll try to be very short, even if it's quite difficult. Nevertheless, what must be said is that when we talk about the state of the air transport industry, we typically tend to have this kind of approach like, okay, we think of what went wrong in the last couple of months, and okay, that needs to be done. We need to be aware of what is happening. Nevertheless, we also have to project ourselves into the future and to gear up for what is going to happen next. And therefore, indeed, it's important to first look into what happens and globally, in just, if I have to summarize it in one single phrase, if we look into particularly the air transport industry here in Namibia, today's status is that it is about half of what it was before the pandemic arrived. Now, that is all great and good to analyze. We have to project ourselves into the future. And there we have to think about, okay, is growth coming back? Can we stimulate traffic in the future? And there we think there's plenty of stuff to do. I analyzed, for instance, the route network that is currently existing, the operators that are present in the market, and the general conclusion is there is indeed things to do. Our recommendation from the sideline of the air transport industry or the airline industry would rather be to try focusing on bringing in competition, because competition is definitely important. It drives efficiency growth. It puts actually airlines under pressure, but that is definitely to the advantage of the traveling public. We already saw a couple of presentations this morning, and indeed, the general conclusion that comes out of it is that tourism is important, travelers are important, and this is at the very heart of this industry. So therefore, indeed, we need to stimulate traffic. We need to stimulate passengers coming over again to Namibia, and that indeed requires stimulation. So that is indeed the current situation. Now, if we look into the future, and if we look into what is happening right now that will have its effects in the future, we see that airlines are indeed ever more operating together. There's things happening in the industry right now that, let's say, 5 years ago would have been considered as impossible to happen. We see Emirates teaming up with United Airlines, for instance. They were competing each other in the past, now they work together. Airlines understand that working together is going to help them move on, or first, survive, and secondly, quickly move on in the future. We see that new airlines are entering the scene. We see that new routes are opened in the African continent today. And actually, putting ourselves a little bit further into the future, we definitely have to gear up for growth, because all fundamental drivers for the growth of the air transport industry are definitely there. So we see economic growth coming in the future, the population is growing, urbanization is happening, and all this actually leads to an increased demand for air traffic.
Sounds like an overall sort of positive feeling, at least. You're also part of a panel discussing post-pandemic recovery in the regional aviation sector and what needs to be done differently. I think you've touched on some of the issues in your previous answer, but what are your main suggestions in this regard?
Yes, indeed. Well, indeed, looking into the state of the industry right now, specifically for Namibia, it's clear that we think that traffic needs to be stimulated. How can we can that be done? Well, it means that, as one gentleman already mentioned this morning, collaboration in practice between all the aviation stakeholders will be needed. I mentioned it, we definitely would encourage bringing in competition between airlines to get away from the situation where the country is depending on one single player in the market to serve one specific route. If we have multiple operators on a specific route, that creates stimulation that will increase traffic, that will bring extra traffic to the country, and as it will have its effect on its economy. We would strongly recommend considering opening up the markets further. We saw we know about the single African air transport market. Actually, earlier this week, some important developments happened there. So we're looking forward to the future to see what the effect of that will be. And, one particular question that has been addressed already this morning as well is, do we need governmental support? Well, our answer would be, yes, of course. If there is an opportunity to get governmental support, yes, we should consider it. Does that mean that the government will need to invest into a new airline? There we would be rather reluctant. We think there's various ways where the government can help. We can, for instance, think of indeed helping airlines to establish themselves, but rather as an investing party rather than a managing party. So leave it to the industry stakeholders that have the expertise to run a competitive airline. That would be your first recommendation. Secondly, the government can actually contribute in many other fields that will drive tourism development and that will drive air transport development. And these can be, for instance, simply marketing Namibia abroad, making sure Namibia and everything it has on offer is well known across the globe rather than just in some specific countries. We could see, for instance, opening up the country for the entry of multiple airlines, so lowering the threshold to make them start their operations. We have been thinking about the visa openness as well, make it easy for passengers to come over to Namibia. So all these kind of things can definitely help in stimulating traffic further.
To speak about something slightly different, the topic has been mentioned by a couple of speakers already, green hydrogen. Of course, that's a pretty big deal in Namibia at the moment. Airbus has actually launched 30E concept hybrid hydrogen aircraft. Is there room for Airbus and Namibia to work together in this regard in the future?
Yes, thank you. Very important question. Indeed, I can tell you that in Airbus, reducing environmental footprint of the aviation industry is at the forefront of all our research and development. Actually, Airbus will invest on average around 2.5 to 3 billion US dollars per year in research and development. And indeed, the hydrogen subject is definitely part of that. Now, we believe that indeed hydrogen is a promising technology for the future that will enable us to reduce the environmental footprint if we manage to get it on board and implement it on the aircraft flying around. Nevertheless, we have to be very, let's say, neutral in it as well, or we need to be realistic. It's not the only answer. Actually, hydrogen is part of our development for the future. Nevertheless, we also strongly believe in sustainable aviation fuels. Today, all our aircraft types are certified to fly with 50% sustainable aviation fuel blends. Our target is to bring that up to 100%. So that's one definitely a very important contributor to reducing the environmental footprint. Then beyond that, we need to understand that today, only 20% of the in-service fleet is actually the latest generation aircraft. 80% is still there to be replaced, and that in itself will also reduce the environmental impact of aviation. Now, to come back to your question, would Airbus be ready to work together with Namibia in the context of generating hydrogen? Well, if the capabilities are there, and if stakeholders are ready to work together with Airbus, then, of course, we will certainly not shy away and say, like, guys, no, of course not. Yes, of course we want to do that. We would always be interested. That's, by the way, also one of the reasons we're here today. We want to connect with aviation stakeholders, as I mentioned before, and this is definitely part of possibilities we can do.
Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the conference. And seeing as we touched on the topic, I hope you come back for a holiday.
I'll certainly do it. Thank you very much.
David Bishop there speaking to Geert Lemaire, the Market Intelligence and Consulting Director for Airbus in France. More international representatives here at the forum. Angie Skoltz now speaks to the Finnish Minister for Development, Cooperation and Foreign Trade. That's Ville Skinnari, as he chats about cooperation between Namibia and the Finnish government. Angie Skoltz catches up with him.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Minister. In your speech, you were talking about Finland and Namibia collaborating. Tell us more about this.
Well, aviation industry has faced many challenges. COVID, everything all together. We've seen a lot of challenges throughout the world, especially with aviation industry. And of course, today I'm very proud and honored to disclose that we are going to the next level as far as our partnership between Finland and Namibia. We have a great history, 150 years, but now we look at the next 150 years. This AirHow Knowledge Center is really combining all types of know-hows, education, but all the relevant elements that we can build up here in Namibia, but also further in this continent. So I really appreciate this partnership, because if we look at the, for instance, digitalization, development of different biofuels, for instance, weather observation systems, highly developed air traffic control technology, related training and skills development, we can create a lot together. And of course, at the end of the day, it means new jobs for people here, but it also means that we can build up more safety. We can build up probably better networks within the continent, because I think that's what the continent needs now after COVID. We really have to build up together, and Finland wants to be a trusted partner in this.
And then when can we see the fruits of this?
Well, I think we can already see, if I look at the audience today here, there's a lot of expertise from all over the world. We heard from Airbus, we heard from IATA that we have a strong commitment to really utilize the potential of Africa when it comes to tourism, when it comes to business people, but especially cargo and logistics, because logistics is the key for the world. And if I look at Namibia, how now the location, the opportunities at the sea, in the air. But we have to be, of course, honest with the infrastructure. We have to really build long-term, but we have to act now. And I think the aviation industry is a great example that Namibia and Finland can pave the way for the whole continent.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. Transnamib Chief Executive Officer Johnny Smith says a total of 15 billion Namibia dollars is needed for the full upgrading of the Kransberg-Tsumeb railway route, and highlighted that most of the railway infrastructure in the country was built in 1960, and upgrading it is crucial. Company spokesperson Abigail Rubenheimer meanwhile says that the company is preparing to move more freight volumes on the railway by upgrading the current railway that links Namibia to Angola, the DRC and Zambia. In other local news, Minister of Fisheries and Marine Resources Derek Claassen pointed out that the scientific surveys have found that the country's pilchard stock still remains in a precarious state, and the spawning stock biomass was also insignificant. The Trade Union Congress of Namibia called for a decent work framework for farm workers, while the Ondangwa Town Council and NAPU signed a wage agreement on Friday following the industrial action by some of the town council's employees. And Statistician General Alex Shimwafeni revealed that the annual inflation rate measured monthly was 7.1% in October 2022, higher than in October 2021 when it stood at 3.6%. Namibia has also joined the African Petroleum Producers Organization, making it the organization's newest African exporting member. Despite the country not yet actually producing any oil, Manager for Marketing Communication at the National Petroleum Corporation of Namibia, Paulo Coelho, says that this is a great opportunity for Namibia to learn from other countries.
So this will open up many doors in relationship with other countries in OPOC, and it will create synergies and allow us to create relationships that will give skills transfer, knowledge transfer, and just obviously give us trade routes and just help the company economically and will help us grow. We are still a relatively infantile company in our country when it comes to oil and gas, and we want to do things right from the get-go and learn from our other African countries, see where we can better.
Meanwhile, Recon Africa has reported that the drill at its Makandina 8-2 well in the Kavango region was geologically successful, but did not find any economic accumulations of hydrocarbons. In news from the rest of Africa, Uganda's business community has welcomed a move by China to grant zero tariff treatment on 98% of taxable items from 10 less developed countries, including Uganda. And Nigeria has approved the construction of a 1,650-megawatt hydropower plant at a cost of $3 billion, making it one of the single biggest power projects in the country. Internationally, following the collapse of rival exchange FTX, the head of Binance, which claims to be the world's biggest Bitcoin and altcoin exchange by volume, has called for new but stable and clear regulations for the cryptocurrency industry. The upper house of the German federal parliament passed a large financial package aimed at providing urgent support to gas and district heating customers. The International Monetary Fund is warning that the global economic outlook is looking gloomier than it did a month ago, and the World Food Import Bill is expected to surpass $1.9 trillion in 2022, a 10% increase compared to last year's record level. This, as the United Nations said that the world's population surged past 8 billion people on Tuesday, warning that more hardship is in store for regions already facing resource scarcity due to climate change.
The Business Report.
So every week we try and add a little bit of value into those of you managing businesses, managing people, or managing environments. And in order to do that, we've connected up with Monique Landman-Bovenkamp, who is the founder of a company called Unchained People, and she calls herself the Chief Empathy Officer and speaks about leading from the heart. She operates in Netherlands and South Africa. Monique, welcome to the show. If you look at this conference, this aviation conference that we're covering this week, and the aviation industry, what parallels can you see from a leadership perspective?
Hi, Gary. Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show again. Well, let me start by saying I'm absolutely fascinated by this industry. It is so complex. It's high tech on one hand, and at the same time, it's all about people. It is high tech, but at the same time, it's the mechanic building an airplane part. It is from the flight attendant into the guys who hand deliver the service and fix problems in cable wiring. So it is absolutely, it's a very fascinating industry. And I love looking at this conference that it touches so many facets of this aviation industry. And I think a few things that instantly came to mind is that there are a few really important challenges that the industry is facing. It's like any other business, recovering after COVID, but also the need to innovate and to build zero emission planes, the desperate need to create a more sustainable aviation industry and in every part of the whole value chain. But there's also societal pressure like flight shame and also trying to keep it affordable for everyone to fly. And it's also about the beautiful aspect, the human aspect of connecting people, connecting businesses, connecting families. And that's the ultimate goal, to connect people all over the world and making it possible by plane. The innovation and recovering from COVID, well, like most other industries, coming up to full speed, but at the same time not having the same staff complement as before COVID. So doing the job with not the same amount of staff that you used to have before. And last but not least, I think it is people's industry, serving the end customer, serving each individual, getting them from A to B safe and happy and having a high touch experience. And it is extremely complex.
What do you see the biggest challenge working in the service industry for those who are customer facing?
I think the biggest challenges in current society is that everyone working in the service industry, and especially the part of aviation, of traveling, of flying, and every employee will agree with me, it's that it's been extremely tough. And not only are we all running on empty and are at the end of our flexibility and we're tired and we are working on survival mode, but now imagine your passengers, your customers, your stakeholders, everyone else who buys your product, use your product, want to buy from you or want to do business with you. We're all running on empty. And especially with traveling, it's extremely stressful. And I fly constantly up to South Africa and commute between the Netherlands, Namibia, and South Africa. So I know, and even though I'm an experienced traveler, I can see how stressful it is for people working in the aviation. And because the customers are anxious, they are afraid, they're stressed, they're tired, the service is not up to standard everywhere, because all businesses are working with lesser people as we were used to have. So the queues are longer, there are more, especially what I've realized in Europe, specifically Amsterdam Airport. I mean, it's been very hectic this last summer. Passengers numbers picking up and staff, those numbers are not as before COVID. So facing people with travel anxiety, people who are stressed while you're at the same time also having to deliver your best work and to give service with a smile and to be extremely resilient. The only real advice is for any business leader in any business in this industry, in this travel industry, is to make sure that your employees have a way to express, that they can share their mental health challenges, that they feel inspired by you, that they feel acknowledged, and you have to really do more work as leading people in this industry than you ever done before. You have to keep them going and have to inspire them. And for them to give their best work ever, all business leaders, all managers, supervisors, we really need to acknowledge that we're all on empty. And by realizing that, and that's one thing that I do in my training, hospitality training or service training, when we realize that the customers are yelling at us or abusive or extremely, they lash out or they spin off, one advice I can only give is that you have to realize in an instant that it's hardly ever about you, but it's what people bring to on their journeys, and they are just ventilating their own anxiety and navigating that hospitality and giving the best service, realizing that we are all running on empty and you just have to connect on a heart level with empathy and realizing that it's often not about you, but it's about their struggle. And once you learn and you see that in an instant, you realize that that's where you learn grace and to be able to stay kind in a stressful situation. That would be my first tip.
What would be your advice to leaders in the aviation industry?
My advice definitely would be do everything possible in your power to retain your skilled, experienced staff. Because having the right people doing this specialized work or having the right people in the more in the service part of the industry, retaining your best talent and focus all of the energy on upscaling, training, retraining. So what's make them sure that every staff member is has relevant skills, future-proof skills. And I think creating the excitement for the aviation product again and igniting their hearts for technical skills, for igniting hearts for learning a new profession in the industry, make sure that every employee feels like they have a purpose. And for each role, like from the mechanic to the warehouse manager to the luggage handling departments to in-flight catering services, the people who build, and each person in the whole value chain in aviation, is giving them this feeling that they matter, that it is so important in this industry that everyone has a specific role. Nobody is redundant. And to get the plane from A to B safely with happy customers, you need everyone. So training and motivating your staff and light the fires within your company, that also will attract future talent and make it a great place to work. Make the industry exciting again, as we used to think, like it was like sort of every child's dream to work in aviation. We must get that part back. And with all future now, maybe the future of electric flying or building the resilience to overcome constant adversity, future crisis, my advice to leaders is also to focus on the people, the staff in by retraining them and upskilling their talents, and look for young people in schools already attracting them to your industry, because you're going to need all the hands on board and you need people who are resilient enough, like navigate all the changes and all the crises.
That's Monique Landman-Boerenkamp, founder of Unchained People, speaking about leading from the heart. That's it for this marathon episode of The Business Report. Thanks for sticking with us. If you heard any bits of anything or want to catch up on anything that happened either in this episode or previous episodes, go to your app store, look for podcasts, and you'll find us there, Apple and Android. Or you can go to nova.com.na and you'll see all 50 of our episodes available for download and listening there, as well as all of our spotlights to date. So we've had some fascinating people in the 50 episodes so far, and some wonderful interviews. As always, thanks to our contributors for stepping in. Thanks to the Namibian Airports Company for involving Future Media and The Business Report in the aviation and Connectivity Forum that still continues tomorrow. Some fascinating discussions this afternoon, especially around the need for a state airline and some not heated debate, but certainly enthusiastic discussion, and more expected tomorrow. A white paper expected to be produced from this forum for presentation to the Namibian people, and let's hope we see some good action on this as it affects many areas of our economy. Thanks to Raymond Ziefeldt, our technical producer, who had a big job this evening in putting together all the various bits and bobs, David Bishop and Angie Schultz, our producer, for their attendance and reporting from the forum. And as always, thanks to you, our loyal listener, for making this show Namibia's leading business show. Have a wonderful evening, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back next week.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Strubble and produced by Angie Schultz and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.